Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil. Bellerín, qué golazo.
Magnífico.
Gol. Qué golazo de Bellerín. Gol del Arsenal. Gran gol de Bellerín, 1-0.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning to you and happy Easter, and may the blessings of the chocolate scary bunny be with you.
Yes, I hope you got everything you asked for this Easter.
I did.
Well, you did on Saturday, certainly.
Yes, for sure. That was good. That was good, right?
Yeah, it was great. Mm. Loved it. It's a weird weekend this for me, because being self-employed, I'm sure you're the same thing. I'm sort of, all these days off sort of don't really happen in my mind.
Yeah.
And then on Friday, there was championship football happening in the middle of what, as far as I was concerned, was a working day. It's going to be the same today. It's mind-blowing.
Yeah, it is a bit weird. Other people get to enjoy the benefits of a bank holiday. In fairness, I had a lie-in of an extra hour and a quarter this morning. That
priceless.
Was my treat. Was
priceless, invaluable to you. I mean, you know, all those early starts. But anyway, we're not asking for too much sympathy. I think it's a little bit of work on Friday night is a fair price to pay for what we saw on Saturday.
That is very true. That's very true. It was pants around the ankles good, I think you could say.
It was. How's your brother?
He's fine. He's sort of quite philosophical about the whole thing. As he said yesterday, when we were having a Sunday dinner up in my dad's house, he was like, well, look, the thing is, none of it matters at all, and we're all going to die at some point. And it was very hard to argue with that.
No, it's sort of, that's the ultimate escalation, isn't it, of any situation. Once you put that down, there's no coming back, really.
Yeah, you know, and there's a huge element of truth to that.
Mm.
But, you know, on the other hand, it was very enjoyable to see them get spanked like that, considering they'd given us a spanking at Anfield the previous season, and even this season, despite the fact we should have won that game, performance-wise, they were very, very much better than us. But there was a lot to be encouraged about from the Arsenal performance. Before we go into all the good stuff, let's just whip it around a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
Should we, despite the context of the win and everything else, should we be in any way concerned about that little period after we'd started the game so brightly? They came back into it, and there were some moments of worry and danger, particularly that time when Markovic went through and put the ball across for Sterling for a tap-in, but misplaced his pass. That would really have changed the complexion of the afternoon.
Yeah, that was a worrying period, and watching it, you sort of couldn't help but feel, it was strange, Arsenal had started so brilliantly, hadn't they, in the first 10 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Came out of the traps absolutely flying, forcing Liverpool into errors, identifying a weakness on the ball at the back, and really putting a lot of pressure on, but not capitalising on those chances. Aaron Ramsey, the most memorable one, really, where Mignolet produced a decent save to deny him. And then, yeah, well, we kind of went off the boil slightly, and they came back into the game, and it felt like they sensed that we were almost as vulnerable as them in some respects. And that chance, obviously, they should have scored there. Had they done so, the whole complexion of the game would have changed, and, you know, God only knows what would have happened. So I guess that is a bit of a concern, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at the overall performance and what we were capable of doing, it wouldn't have been an insurmountable problem, but I guess it would have been one of those where you're like, ah, here we go again, having started brightly, and we let them concede. We concede the first goal, etc., etc. You give yourself an uphill task, and, you know, maybe it might have made some of those Liverpool players think they were any good.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit like the Manchester United game in some respects, you know, where we started quite well in that match, but they grew into it and got the first goal. And from that point, you know, the opposition get full of confidence and the whole dynamic shifts. So we were definitely a little bit fortunate that Lazar Markovic, I mean, I don't really know what he was thinking, really. I mean, I understand the decision to pass. I suppose he was trying to be generous, but he just overhit it, didn't he?
Do you think he should have gone for goal?
He got a lot of stick for not taking the shot on. But I think, you know, had he done so and missed, people probably would have pointed out, look how free Raheem Sterling was. So, you know, you can't be too harsh on him, but I think he just overhit the thing and they'll be pretty disappointed, to be honest.
They will be. They will be. And, you know, it's good for us to be able to laugh at him.
Yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind at all.
No, it was one of the enjoyable moments of the game, in fairness. It was that brilliant pantomime thing, wasn't it, where you could see the terror in the fans behind the goal. You could see that, oh my God, this is going all wrong. And then when the ball ran across Sterling, it was like, way! It's almost as good as a goal in a way, just from a pure celebration point of view. So
yeah, exactly. And I think Sterling sort of fell over as well, trying to reach it. And people falling over is always a highlight, isn't it?
Face plants, they're good.
Yeah, can't get enough of those.
No. Okay. Well, with that bit out of the way, and I think people will accept that sometimes in a game of football, you do need a bit of luck or you need something to go your way. After that, I don't think there can be any doubt as to the quality of the game that we played. And the comprehensive nature of the win was obviously just brilliant from a fan's point of view when you beat a big team like that. But I think there was something quite striking about how well we beat Liverpool and what that means for them this season in terms of their Champions League prospects and our Champions League prospects. It's sort of like, I don't know, cutting off a nasty appendage or, you know, a boil or a growth or something. It just felt clinical.
It did.
That was a weird metaphor there. I'm sorry. I don't know where I was going with that one.
It's okay. It's obviously something, you know, close to the surface in your mind. But I think that, that's them done, I think, for the top four, to be honest. 9 points away from us. But I think more than that, the kind of psychological impact of that kind of defeat is going to be very, very difficult to overcome, wouldn't you say?
For sure. Because I think they were supposed to kick on, weren't they? Even though they sold Suarez, they spent a lot of money. Liverpool spent a huge amount of money. Now, I know a lot of it came from the Suarez sale, but you have to look at what they bought and be very dubious about their transfer policy and the players that they brought in. You could see that the way they tried to replace Suarez was probably the right way, in that you can't find another Suarez, particularly when Arsenal go and buy Alexis, if that's the player that you've identified as the Suarez replacement, and he ends up with us. So you go out and you buy Balotelli, Ricky Lambert, the Markovic guy. Who else did they get? Some other cunts.
20 million Dejan Lovren, who Dejan didn't Lovren, start yesterday.
Adam Lallana. I think what they've done is probably confirm their status as a top six team, but not one that is really capable of challenging for a title. You know, the players that they brought in have been pretty average, and it cements their status as a pretty average side.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they've been hurt by the multiple injuries of Daniel Sturridge, but I suppose what we're saying is that they didn't buy enough to compensate for that. You know, if Balotelli or even Lambert, who frankly I'd forgotten was there, had worked out better, then that wouldn't have been such a problem. And I think while we didn't have the perfect summer, we all know there was stuff that Arsenal didn't get done that they might have done. When you compare our summer to Liverpool's, we had a pretty good one. And I think obviously the signing of Alexis proved absolutely crucial, and I thought, you know, his performance on the day and his goal kind of underlined that, really. I think in signing him, we leapfrogged them in large part.
Yeah, what was your favourite goal? Was the Alexis one your favourite?
I think so. I think the emphatic nature of the finish was my favourite thing about it. I heard that Michael Owen was critical of Simon Mignolet, which seems bizarre to me.
I think that's where it all came from, where he went, oh, Mignolet will be disappointed with that. Like, how could he? The ball flew past him. Like, just unbelievably fast. Because if you notice, as he hits it, it kind of bobbles up. So he's almost hitting it on, like, on the volley. It was an incredible goal, I thought. A brilliant... what I liked about it was that it began with... I think it was Coquelin and Ozil who pressurized the Liverpool players in midfield. Bellerin's pass into Ramsey was great, but Ramsey's touch and turn and pass then into Alexis was absolutely brilliant. His first touch there was just around the corner, fantastic. And then the hit, that was just sensational. I don't know how any blame could be apportioned to any goalkeeper for that, to be honest.
Was that your favourite goal of the day?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. I like Giroud's as well, but, you know, it was one of those late goals that, you know, not that it, a bit of a Rosicky icing on the cake kind of goal, you know, that way. Great finish.
Yeah. It's one of those goals that, like, a player who's full of confidence scores.
Yeah, you know, Bellerin's goal, I was going to call him Bellerin, go down the Spanish route, because I've been working on the new theme tune for today, so you got some Spanish commentary. And they call him Bellerin. But we'll call him Bellerin, I think. We'll just, for ease of access.
Yeah, take pity on me.
Yes,
my problems with pronunciation.
But, you know, I think that was a great run and a great finish, but dodgy defending, you'd have to say.
Very poor from Moreno, I think it was. He's another who they bought for big money, who's underperformed. But I did enjoy that goal, and I thought it was a great crossfield pass from Mesut Ozil in the build-up to it, too.
Yes. It was.
And his goal, I enjoyed. I mean, you know, goalkeepers, they say, shouldn't get beaten on that side. I think that's fair. But if you are going to get beaten, get beaten by a strike like that, which was pretty impressive.
Yeah. I'd be disappointed if my goalkeeper was beaten there. At the near post. I think we'd all be roundly critical of an Arsenal goalkeeper who was beaten there. But it was a brilliant hit. So four sensational goals, really. But for me, Alexis was the absolute favourite.
The pick of the bunch.
Mm.
Who did you think was our best player on the day?
That's a really good question. It's very difficult. Because normally somebody stands out, but I think pretty much everybody played really well. I don't know. I don't know if you can... Do you have a particular one that you would pick out above anyone?
No, not really. I mean, I was doing player ratings for ESPN, and I was giving out a lot of eights. You know, I just thought it was a really good team performance.
Yeah.
I mean, finding a weak link is as difficult a job, really.
Yeah, I don't think there really was one. And it was interesting that when Koscielny went off, Gabriel came in, and we didn't look in any way bothered by that. He just sort of slotted in alongside Mertesacker really well.
Yeah.
And consistently, the players who came on got involved. Danny Welbeck came on, got involved well, could have scored a goal himself. I mean, I think in terms of individual performances, it seems kind of churlish to pick one out above everyone else. Maybe Ozil, because, I don't know, I just loved a lot of what he did. Some of the movement, some of the shimmies away from players. And that bit where, in the build-up to the Bellerin goal, he just took the ball in the centre circle, took a touch, had a look up, and just sort of swept the ball out to Ramsey on the right-hand side. Absolute perfect pass. I don't know why I liked that so much, but it just showed great awareness and great vision to sort of stretch the play and allow Bellerin to get forward. And yeah, I would if I had to choose one, I'd choose Ozil.
You know what I liked? I liked that when... For the free kick goal, it was actually Ozil that was fouled by Sacco. And as soon as the whistle blew, he wanted the ball.
Mm.
You know, he wanted the ball. He wanted to take the free kick. And I liked that there was that kind of conviction about his performance. And I didn't actually think he had a great opening 20 minutes. And I think had that happened last season, maybe his head would have gone down. But I really thought he played his way into the game and made a really tangible impact. So, yeah, I think... Given the criticism that he has faced for his failure to deliver in some big games, I think it's probably worth pointing out that he made a considerable impact this time around.
Yeah, they said on the TV that as he was standing over it, they were watching him in the warm-up, and he'd taken five or six free kicks from that position in the warm-up. So,
I guess. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Practice makes perfect, I guess.
Well, yeah, so we say here.
Hmm.
So, what did you make of future Arsenal star Raheem Sterling?
Yeah, he's good. He's good. Won the penalty well. Should have scored, obviously. But, you know, I thought he was handled pretty well overall. He was quiet. Liverpool weren't up to much from an attacking point of view. So it's hard to make a real judgment on him. I thought he did all right. You know.
It was intriguing. He was kind of there was a little period in the first half where he was in a sort of one-on-one battle with Per Mertesacker, which at first glance appears hugely mismatched.
Yeah.
But Per did really well, actually, and sort of he basically shut down Sterling a lot of time before he could get the run on him, which I thought was quite impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a strange one, actually. Arsenal, quite a lot of Arsenal fans in the ground were booing Sterling.
Really?
Yeah, which I was like, I can't quite figure out the logic of this. Is it just because we've been stung by money grabbers so many times?
That it's preemptive.
Yeah, exactly. We're booing him for when he leaves Arsenal for Real Madrid. I don't know.
In 6 years' time.
Yeah. So that was a bit odd.
That is a bit odd. Maybe we just don't like being used in these transfer negotiations.
Well, that he's having with Liverpool. One does get the sense that that might be exactly what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, overall a good weekend then, because Tottenham dropped points as well against Burnley.
That was the worst game I've seen for some time, I have to say. Did you watch that?
I didn't know, because I had anything else to do.
Right, yeah. Let me tell you, Sunday was anything but super.
Yeah, I did see a bit of the... who was the other guy? The Newcastle-Sunderland derby.
Right,
Jesus. It was like two pub teams, wasn't it?
I know. Settled by Jermaine Defoe. Couldn't get worse, really.
Yeah. It was
honestly,
a great goal.
Tottenham-Burnley. Great, brilliant goal, but Tottenham-Burnley was... It was a real... I mean, they may as well have replaced the ball with tumbleweed.
Really? That bad?
It was that bad, yeah.
Why didn't you just give up?
Because Jesus didn't, and it's Easter. No, I don't know. I was sort of, you know, trying to make the most of Easter Sunday, and for me that means watching huge amounts of football back-to-back.
Yeah.
That's my religion.
Mm. Well, so what now then for the rest of this season? Arsenal are in second place.
I know.
You know, what's realistic between now and the end of the season? Manchester City can go back above us, I think, if they beat... Who are they playing? Crystal Palace tonight. Will Sonogo be playing, I wonder?
I hope so.
Come on, yeah.
If you give me something to cheer, definitely.
Yeah.
I don't know what's realistic. I'm quite glad because I missed the entirety of Chelsea Stoke.
Same.
And I'm pretty relieved because I think had I been watching at 1-1, I do think that there is still some small percentage of me that would dare to dream before Loic Remy, you know, scuppered our imaginary title chances.
Yeah.
I think the best we can hope for is second place. And I think that is something to aim for and something to, you know, people say, what's the point in being second? Well, the point is it's progress.
Mm.
And the point is that in any competition, you strive to finish as high as is feasibly possible.
Yeah.
And I think that will be second this year. And I think we can do it. And I think that, yeah, there's a good chance that that's where we'll end up.
Mm. So, look, this season then, we've beaten Manchester City.
Mm.
People say we couldn't beat the big teams. And we're beating the big teams and strangely losing to small teams like Stoke and Southampton Tottenham. And Tottenham. Yeah, exactly. But we've beaten Manchester City. We've beaten Manchester United in the FA Cup. We've beaten Liverpool. And we spoke about this last week about progress. And I spoke about this with Amy on Friday in the Arsecast about how it feels. It does feel as if the team is... in a better place, in a better position, more capable of getting results in these big games, which isn't to say it's perfect or everything's rosy. I think there's still improvements can be made. But I think we have to... It just feels like we're on the right track and not necessarily that it's easy to derail us from this point.
Yeah.
I mean, the Chelsea game coming up in a couple of weeks, if we win that game... I'm not going to suggest that that will open up the title or anything like that. But if we win that game, if we finally get a win against Chelsea, then I think you have to look at this season as one which should be used as a platform to build on for next season, and a real proper full-on title challenge from the start. No excuses and no reasons why we shouldn't be able to do it.
Absolutely. I mean, I know we might have a real-life cup final on the horizon, but in some ways that this Chelsea game feels like another one. I really feel like it's a massive match, and it's time for Arsenal to put this hoodoo beyond them. It's time for Arsene Wenger to get a win over Jose Mourinho, and I think we're in the shape to do it. I'm a bit cautious about saying this, but when I look at the second half of this season, I don't see a better team than Arsenal. I don't see any side who's played better football, played more consistently, and to be honest, who's got better run of results.
Mm.
And I think that's, in some respects, as frustrating as it is, satisfying, because it makes you wonder why we couldn't do it in the first half of the campaign. But given that we're in the position that we're in now, we need to take that momentum and use it to put one over Chelsea, because I think that would be a massive boost ahead of next season.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it would just give us something. You know, if we're not going to lift the big trophy at the end of the year, then you need these kinds of victories to be those landmark moments that you look back on a season favourably for.
Yeah.
And beating Chelsea for the first time in God knows how long would definitely be one of those. So we've beaten your brother's team. I really hope we can beat mine now.
Well, I think the universe owes us.
Definitely.
You know, it would be unfair for me to have the gloating rights over my brother and for you not to have the same.
Exactly.
So I think that would be bad.
It's time for the universe to pay up, to be honest. It's been long enough.
Right. Okay, well, look, we'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with some of your questions in part two right after this. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. I forgot what I was going to say. I know what I was going to say. I'm going to leave this in now just so people get the full broadcast experience. This is how it goes down normally.
We've just humanized us.
Yes. Damn. We were so professional up to this point.
We were superhuman previously. Yeah. Now we're mere mortals.
God damn. Anyway, I was going to ask if people could give us a rating or a review on iTunes if they listen to the podcast through iTunes. Feel free to give us a rating or a review or both, because it helps get the podcast high up the charts. And the more people that listen, the more human we can become. And that's our aim one day, is to become real little boys like Pinocchio.
To fully assimilate into mm-hmm. the human race.
So you can do that. I think you can do it on Stitcher as well. If you listen to the podcast on Stitcher, you can give us a review on there too. So the more the merrier. And we thank you very, very sincerely for it.
Thank you very much.
That didn't sound very sincere at all.
I know, I blew it, didn't I? Yeah. It was going so well up to that point.
Right, okay. Well, look, we'll get on to the part where we answer questions sent to us very kindly by readers and listeners on Twitter, at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog. And thanks, as always, for all the questions you submit. We can't get to even half of them, but we do read them all, and we feel special. This first one, it comes from SO 260589. Don't know what mm-hmm. those numbers mean. Couldn't be. Anyway, he says... The Highbury Spy says Barcelona are eyeing up Bellerin as a replacement for Dani Alves. Is he a cunt?
Is who a cunt, sorry?
I don't know. Dani Alves, I guess. Or the Highbury Spy, or who? Hector Bellerin himself. Who knows?
Well, look, Dani Alves, I think, definitely is.
Yeah.
A series of haircuts demonstrate that quite effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you've really worried me there. That story makes far too much sense.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, but did you not see the quotes from Bellerin this weekend where he says, you know, my dream was to be a footballer, not to be a Barcelona player. Life doesn't end at Barcelona, he said, which I thought was great.
That's great. I haven't seen that. Well, that's good. As long as he doesn't go all Fabregas on us, you know, I know I said a dirty word there and decide he's got a return to Catalonia.
Mm.
I think Dani Alves is a cunt. I don't know the Highbury Spy. I don't think they are. And Hector Bellerin definitely isn't. I think Hector Bellerin has been... I mean, it's only Francis Coquelin that stops him being the surprise of the season. Because Coquelin's resurgence has been so remarkable and so unexpected. But Bellerin, you know, started the season, I think at one point when we had Jenkinson on the books, he would have been fourth or fifth choice in that role. And now I think he's got a genuine case to feel a little bit disappointed when, if and when Mathieu Debuchy comes straight back into the side, because his improvement has been superb and his form is excellent. Mm. And with two goals this season, I noticed on Match of the Day, he now has as many Premier League goals, I think, as Mario Balotelli. So there you go.
There you go. He's got more than Yaya Sanogo. More Arsenal goals in his career.
Yeah.
Not that that necessarily means anything, but, you know, I think you're right that in terms of the surprise of the season, he's right up there. I think Coquelin probably is a bigger one, just from the point of view that people viewed Bellerin as a young player with a load of potential that would eventually get his chance. I remember reading Mikel Arteta saying that he was probably going to be Arsenal's right back for years to come, and this was last season, I think, or maybe earlier this season. So I think from that point of view, people realised there was a player in there, but it was just when he was going to get his chance. Coquelin, of course, was on his way out, basically. Arsene Wenger saying after the Liverpool game that, you know, in his head, he couldn't see Coquelin as a first-choice player at Arsenal. And I think that tells you a lot about football, that a man who is experienced in management as Arsene Wenger would never rule anything out, of course, but just could not see a way that Coquelin would be a first-choice player at Arsenal. And anybody who says that they envisaged him making this kind of improvement and having this kind of an impact on the team is either a certifiable genius or lying through their teeth.
Right. Yeah, a very naughty man.
Very naughty. And one, when you lie, your nose gets bigger and you won't become a real little boy. You'll remain a wooden puppet. Remember that.
That's why we always tell the truth.
Exactly. So from that point of view, Coquelin's emergence has been more of a surprise. But Bellerin, what he's done is, I think he's kind of closed the door on Jenkinson's Arsenal career. I think.
For definite, I would say.
You know, He's really exciting, really exciting young player.
Has he closed the door on Callum Chambers' right-back career?
Yeah, I would say so. What was interesting, though, was Arsene Wenger saying he chose Bellerin rather than Chambers because he expected Sturridge to play and to play from...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The left... and his low centre, or maybe Sterling, or I can't remember which one of them he expected, but because of the low centre of gravity, and Hector is quite small and fast on the turn and mobile, so that's why he chose him there. So I do wonder if for certain games he might feel that Chambers could be a better option, perhaps against a team that's a bit more physical or more direct. For example, Chambers' height and ability in the air might be a bit better than Bellerin's. But look, it's a brilliantly healthy situation for this club to be in, to have those options at right back. I know we discussed last week that Debuchy would probably come straight back into the side, but I think as more time goes on, it gives more for Arsene Wenger to think about.
Sorry, you mentioned the depth there, and I was just thinking, you know, we had those players who played that friendly last week, Debuchy, Arteta, Wilshere Diaby, and in his press conference before the Liverpool game, Arsene talked about being impressed by how fit they were. They were potentially in contention for the squad, and yet none of them make even the substitute bench. It tells you something about the amount of depth we've got available. I think it's a very strong position to be in.
Mm. There was a shot of Mikel Arteta, actually, just while we touch on him, in the opening minutes of the game on the television. You know the way the players normally sit behind the bench, the players who aren't fit or aren't in the squad. They sort of sit behind the bench. But Arteta was sitting like in his almost training gear, I think, but sitting among the coaching staff.
Mm.
Something to be read into that, or?
I don't know. I don't know about at this stage, but if you speak to anyone about Mikel Arteta, they always say that they think there could be a great coach in him. You know, he's someone who thinks very deeply about the game, incredibly committed to the game as well. And I think I'd love to see something we've not had in recent years is players transitioning from the playing staff to the coaching staff. And I'd love to see someone like Arteta do that. He's not the only one. I'd love to see someone like Rzyczki do that too, if he was willing to stick around.
He could be guitar coach.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think, I think in seriousness, that would be a great step for Arteta, but I don't think he's ready to embark upon that road necessarily right away. I think having missed so much of this season, he'll probably want to get a bit more playing time out of his system before he looks onto the coaching side.
Mm. All right. Next question then.
Let's have a question. Okay. We mentioned the surprise resurgence of Coquelin.
Yeah.
But Spornik666, who sounds like an intriguing fellow.
A bit satanic for this time of year.
Dastardly interests, mm-hmm. Yeah. he asks, which player resurgence has been the best? Ozil's, Giroud's, Monreal's or Coquelin's?
Well, I think just from a starting point of view, if you take the base level, it's got to be Coquelin.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was nowhere, shipped out on loan to Charlton, hauled back, much to his ire at the time, because he felt he was just going to come back and sit on the bench. And all of a sudden, he's become a crucial part of the team. So I think from that point of view, you've got to go with Coquelin. Ozil, of course, a world-class player. When he arrived, had a difficult opening part of the season, then was injured. I think since he's come back, he's been brilliant. I love watching him in the team. I love what he does with the football. Monreal, fantastic. Again, he's somebody who fought for his place. You know, I think he was behind. People would have accepted that in the early part of the season. Gibbs was the obvious number one left back. That's no longer the case. No longer the case. Monreal is. And that's a healthy situation. Giroud, you know, he's improved. Hasn't scored against the big teams. That was the criticism. He's done that this season. His goal-scoring record since he came back from injury has been absolutely outstanding. His contribution to the way the team plays is brilliant as well. But again, what we're seeing is, I guess, an improvement from an already decent level. Like, he scored 17 in his first season. I think he 22 in his second season. I think he's on course to improve on that. This season, despite the fact he missed 3 or 4 months with a broken leg. So I think we're looking at a player who's improved in stages, but from a just base level, it's got to be Coquelin.
I agree. I thought he was excellent against Liverpool as well. You know, because there were times where, with Ramsey on the right and Cazorla in central midfield, he was a little bit isolated. But he produced so many of those sliding interceptions to cut attacks out. I just thought he set some of that tempo that helped Arsenal overpower Liverpool in the early stages of the game. So, yeah, I think he definitely deserves credit for that. I think those four players have all had dramatic resurgences, but you've got to pick Coquelin out. You've got to look at Ozil for me, because I do think, you know, some people would say, well, he's always been this good, but he's only getting the recognition now. I think that since he's come back from injury, he's definitely been at a different level. Quite why that is difficult to unpick. If it's the time in the gym, if it's just that feeling fresh, if it's just clearing his head, I don't know. But I think he's gone up a gear, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
And as for Giroud, he just improves year on year on year. And that's something that's true throughout his career. He did it at all his previous clubs. He's doing it at Arsenal. I mean, by the time he's sort of 40 or 50, he's going to be like Messi or Ronaldo.
Yeah, he'll be a 100 goal a season striker. It's amazing.
But I was looking at some of his numbers today, because obviously we're in the midst of the Harry Kane maelstrom, you know, everyone falling over themselves to praise him. But their goals per 90 minutes in the Premier League is absolutely identical. It's 0.7 goals per game. Giroud creates more chances by some distance in every game. Has more assists than Kane per 90 minutes. So over the course of the season, he's actually outperformed the Spurs man. And I think, you know, that sometimes goes unnoticed, but perhaps because he missed those few months with injury, and because of that, he won't be in the contention probably for the big player of the season awards. But very few people have contributed more consistently than him.
Mm.
And yeah, I just think he's been absolutely terrific this season.
All right, here's a question. This one from at J Williams J. This Alexis on fire. And he says, it's looking likely that Chesney is leaving in the summer. It wouldn't surprise me if that were the case, I have to say.
That's you saying that, not J. Williams J.
That's me saying that, yeah.
Right, okay.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Is this rib injury a real rib injury?
That is a really good question.
Has Arsene Wenger taken a rib out of Chesney to try and make another goalkeeper?
Ooh, there's a...
Continuing the biblical theme.
Yeah. I don't know. But who is the serpent in the garden? That's the big question. but anyway, getting back to the point about Chesney, who I still rate as a goalkeeper, but it would now not surprise me if he left in the summer. J. Williams J. wants to know, stick with Ospina or look for a new number one? What would your choice be here?
I think that there is a potential improvement to be made upon Ospina. Do you know what? I still think that Wojciech Szczesny, in terms of, if you break it down, the pure attributes, has the greater potential to be a top goalkeeper.
Mm.
However, I would sort of agree with you that I was absolutely convinced he would be back in the side within a few weeks when he went out in January. And we're into April now, and he shows no sign. Really, it's impossible, I think, to foresee him becoming a Premier League starter again before the end of the campaign. And Ospina's record is very good. I think doubts do persist about him a little bit. I had this question, actually, from Chris, who's one Mr. W on Twitter, and he says, are you worried that Ospina's body language / facial expression makes him look like we just found him at a bus stop? And I do sometimes worry that that might count a little bit against him. It's such a shallow thing, but, you know, when you see him, he doesn't necessarily look as imposing or as dominant as some goalkeepers.
He does look a bit bewildered at times, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And this one comes from just another one I had marked here from JJ at @E_click_tick. And he said, good save by Ospina on Saturday. But would you give him more credit if he had more neck? I mean, yeah, I think you can go too far with the neck thing. You know, a neck is important. Obviously, it's, you know, it keeps your head in place. But you could go too far, like Cristiano Ronaldo, who has the world's most disgusting neck.
Well, and also regular listeners will remember how much I love owls, and they have no discernible neck.
Yes, that's true.
Although, as far as I'm aware, Ospina can't turn his head 360 degrees. If he can, maybe I'd give him more credit.
Mm.
I think he's done really well, and his record of clean sheets is pretty impressive. He almost gets out that penalty at the weekend. But I think there is an improvement to be made in that area. So my feeling is that Chesney will leave. You know, everything we know about his character, do we think he's a guy who's going to be content to sit on the substitutes bench for prolonged periods?
I don't think so.
I don't think so, to be honest. I can see him making some noise about that and probably wanting to go come the summer. I hope that there's been no kind of breakdown in relations. I hope that this is a genuine rib injury, because we do have two FA Cup games. And I guess while we could play David Ospina in those, I'm not hugely confident of throwing in one of the kids in those situations. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So I'd like Chesney to play those games if at all possible. But I think come the summer, I think he might go. And I think then you just buy the best goalkeeper you can buy. And hopefully that will be someone who is good enough that they come in as an established number one.
Mm.
So I think that's one area that will be something that Arsene looks to address in the summer.
Mm. Okay.
What do you think?
I think if the Chesney thing is done, has got to a point where he might go or does decide to go to play regularly, you know, I think if you look at the Arsenal team and you think, where can it be improved considerably, goalkeeper, having a really top goalkeeper is the most obvious one for me. You know, because there's lots of goals in the team. You could say, well, we could have a world-class striker, or we need, you know, maybe another defensive midfield player, or, you know, another centre-half. But you can see within the squad that there's ways of dealing without that. But, you know, a world-class goalkeeper would be a big improvement, or would help this team considerably, I think. You know, a keeper that genuinely wins you points.
The one that's getting bandied around is Petr Cech.
Mm.
Do you feel that that's that would be a good solution, and do you feel it's realistic?
Yeah, I mean, he's a very, very good goalkeeper. 32, so, you know, still got good years, got plenty of experience. Is he better than Ospina? Probably. Yeah, he is better than Ospina, isn't he?
I think so. If you look at his career record and what he's won, unless you believe that he's sort of washed up and finished, which I don't necessarily think is the case.
Yeah. Whether it's realistic or not, I don't know. Maybe he might want to go somewhere else. Maybe he might, after all his years at Chelsea, not want to play for Arsenal. Mm. I don't imagine it would be terribly easy to do a deal with Chelsea for him. So I don't know, but I don't know the world of goalkeepers that well to suggest who else is out there or who else we could get, you know? I do think as well that there are still issues at the training ground when it comes to the goalkeepers, that I think maybe as well as improving the goalkeeping roster, you could look at improving the goalkeeping coaching, perhaps. That's been an area of worry for a while. So, maybe there's more could go on there too. So I don't know, but I do think it's an area that we could improve on, goalkeeper for sure.
Well, Manuel Almunia has retired, so maybe he can come in as the new goalkeeping coach. right, let's have another question.
Yes.
This one comes from the genuinely unpronounceable Peter Firuzbacht.
Right.
I had a go. I mean, there's just every consonant you can imagine in that surname. I'll call him Peter. And he asked, we mentioned him earlier, he might be in action tonight. With only 5 appearances for Crystal Palace and at 22 years of age, does Yaya Sanogo have any future at Arsenal?
It's difficult to see where he fits in, right? Does he play ahead of Giroud? No chance. Does he play ahead of Danny Welbeck? No. Does he play ahead of Alexis? Maybe if, you know, you're playing a team where you need a physical centre forward and you can play Alexis off him, but does he play instead of Alexis or no? I don't know. I mean, I think it was one of those where Arsene Wenger took a bit of a gamble because he was more or less free, wasn't he? I think.
Yeah, it was like
a free transfer. I mean, he obviously sees something in him, but to be perfectly honest, it's very difficult to see him getting the required games at Arsenal to accelerate his improvement. Maybe we just have to look at, having spoken about Coquelin, football can surprise you and a player can suddenly emerge from nowhere, but I would be very surprised. You?
But, I mean, ever since Sanogo sort of came into the club, I've been a little bit surprised at how much game time Arsene Wenger was prepared to afford him. I think partly that was desperation. We didn't have a huge amount of options that time. Now that we do, it's very, very difficult to see him just keeping a regular place in the squad. I mean, I don't know if that will sort of come to its conclusion this summer. I don't know what will happen with Sanogo. We've got 3 strikers out on loan, Podolski, Campbell, Sanogo.
Podolski will go. Podolski's gone in the summer,
Podolski
for sure, 100%.
But I think, to be honest, there's a case. I think Akpom will obviously remain under contract with the club, having just signed a new deal. But I do think there's a potential for all of the other 3 to depart. We know Arsene Wenger has enormous faith in Sanogo, which gives him the advantage. I think he's the most likely to stick around. But if he does stick around, I think his opportunities are going to be really limited.
Mm. Yeah.
So, at 22... you know, I think he'll be wanting to play fairly regularly, surely. You know, having missed the early part of his career with so many injuries, I think he'll want to seize the chance to play more regular football, and I just can't see him getting that at the Emirates Stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
That said, I will be backing him fully this evening against Manchester City. I mean, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, you'll already know about his hat-trick.
Yes, well done, Yaya. Now you've just exposed the fact that we're also time travellers.
Indeed, yeah. Whoops.
You're ruining everything today, James.
I know. Sorry, I'm not officially on holiday. Clearly, my brain is.
Right, here's a question. This one comes from Bill Harding. It's quite an easy, much easier name than your last
Straightforward. Simple.
I'll call him Bill. And he says, Arsenal have a free kick in the last minute of a Premier League match, 25 yards out, dead centre. Who do you want over it?
Ooh, that is a good question. Because until fairly recently in Arsenal history, we would have said pretty much no one. maybe Arsene. I don't know.
Was Van Persie the most overrated free kick taker of all time?
I mean, he's up there. He was up there with Colo Touré and Thomas Vermaelen, I would say. I used to really enjoy their sort of long run-ups and then just smashing it into a wall from 30 yards.
Yeah, the old who can kick the ball hardest is the guy who takes the free kick thing.
Yeah. It was quite a fun little tactic, but I'm not sure it ever worked at any point.
I mean, Van Persie did score some great free kicks, but they were, what, 1 in 40, maybe?
Few and far between, yeah. Mm. I think, the funny thing is, Mikel Arteta was quite a good free kick taker for Everton, but never quite translated that form to Arsenal. I remember
he did get a brilliant one against Aston Villa.
Yeah, that was a great goal, wasn't it?
Mm.
I think in that situation, who would I go for? I think I would just about opt for Alexis. He can be quite erratic on the set pieces, but he's got quite a neat trick of when he hits the ball, he can get quite a low trajectory, but with a lot of movement and dip. Mm. It's not quite the kind of Ronaldo Bale weirdness, but it's moving that way. He's got a kind of, quite an interesting technique that I think, even if it's not right in the corner, can prove quite challenging to a goalkeeper. So he would be mine, although, honourable mention to Santi Cazorla and Mesut Ozil.
Yeah, Cazorla would be mine. I just think in terms of pure technique and a guy who can hit the ball the way he can hit it with both feet, I just think that would be my little bit of security. I know what you're saying about Alexis, and he did score a good one this season, didn't he, against, was it Southampton in the Capital One Cup?
It was indeed.
And that was a, top corner, brilliant free kick. Ozil, we just saw score against Liverpool, and he's had a couple of good ones, actually, in recent weeks. I think one of the keepers had to make a save. Was it against Newcastle? Perhaps? I can't remember.
Newcastle, I think, maybe.
Obviously his technique is brilliant, but I think Cazorla for me, he could hit it with any one of his three legs, and it would be...
Yeah. Well, do you know something I don't? But he also delivered, of course, in the FA Cup final with a really important goal. And a brilliant free kick that was, too.
Mm, it really was. Really was. And I think so that was further than 25 yards, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And if you're talking about someone delivering under pressure, he really did it on that stage. So not a bad choice from you there.
Mm. All right. Have you got one more?
Oh, I'd completely forgotten about the whole thing. I was just reminiscing about Santi Cazorla's free kick.
The FA Cup final.
Okay, yeah, I have got one more. It's from Husario. And he asks, would you rather kiss Charlie Adam or have him score that goal against us?
Well, clearly I'd rather him score that goal against us because Charlie Adam's mouth. It reminds me of that thing in Star Wars. where they're about to throw them in. Jabba the Hutt's about to throw them all in. What's it called? The Sarlacc?
Sarlacc, I think that is what it's called.
Yeah. So no, because he could score that goal against us and we could still win the game. We could still win by 5 or 6 or 8 goals, So I wouldn't kiss Charlie Adam ever.
Are you sure? This might be your one and only chance.
No, you still haven't convinced me there. It's just, no.
Would you not worry about making him happy by giving him the opportunity to score that goal against us? And given that he has already scored that goal against Chelsea, is there a danger he would start to get credit as being a good footballer?
No, because I think all you need to do is remind people of that moment where he tried to strangle Alexis Sanchez. That was the only way that he could deal with him in that very frustrating game against Stoke. His reaction to better players being around him isn't to play better; it's to try and murder them with his
bare
hands.
Which is the problem when he went to Liverpool.
Yeah.
trying to kill Steven Gerrard on the training ground just because he was a better player than him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, alleged. I've just made that up. It's not, you know, don't sue us. But the I don't want to kiss him either. I mean, it was a trick question. There's no one who's saying, yes, I'll kiss Charlie Adam.
That's good. Yeah.
Is there? I mean, if you're out there, do seek help. Mm. You know, we'll put a number at the end of the show.
Yeah. It's a disturbing road we've gone down here, in fairness.
It often is towards the end.
Yeah. Do we need one to get us back
maybe
on
have
track?
You got, have you got one?
No. Well, I'll have a quick look. Which ones have I put aside here? Okay, well, yeah, this one finally then comes from Assad Baker, and he says, is it fun to have a sibling who supports a rival club?
I have to say, I think it is. In large part, it's not been fun for me when Arsenal have played Chelsea in recent years, but there was a time, younger listeners won't remember this, when Chelsea were rubbish. It was great. They had Scott Minto in their team. Jakob Kjellberg, and to be honest, they were no great shakes.
Didn't they did they have that goalkeeper who wore tracksuit bottoms all the time as well?
Yeah, they had a few actually. Well, they had Dmitry Karin, who
was
the Russian.
Fella. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think they had a Norwegian called Frode Grodas, who also might have favoured the tracksuit.
Frodo.
Yeah, exactly. Don't wear the ring. But he yes, it is fun, I think. And also, it just kind of gives you... It's quite useful to get a perspective. Like, it kind of means more when he sort of sidled up to me at the weekend and he said, Olivier Giroud's a good player, isn't he? And I was like, other fans are starting to cotton on. So it's nice to get that sort of little bit of insight too.
Mm.
But the main thing is the rivalry. And, yeah, it's enjoyable. And although I really, really need an Arsenal win over Chelsea now, it's long overdue. It's becoming a bit of a sticking point for me. So I might change my mind about how fun it is should we lose in a few weeks' time.
Is it not better, perhaps, to have an enemy, though, who supports a rival club? Because, you know, when it's your brother, you can only go so far with the ribbing and the gloating. Because
That's true.
Unless you absolutely hate your brother, and I don't hate my brother. So, you know, he's generally quite magnanimous and so am I. And, you know, he's accompanied me a few times to the Emirates to watch Arsenal versus Liverpool. And thankfully, every time he comes, we win. So it's right. I'm not sure it's a trip he's going to make
too many
welcome.
More
times. He is always welcome. Always welcome. And people remind him that he's always welcome when we have a pint after the game. But, yeah, I think it's better to have somebody who you really don't like supporting a rival club. And then you can kind of, you can stick it in.
That's a good point.
My local butchers, one of the chaps is a Manchester United fan, and you know we have a bit of friendly ribbing from time to time about the football. And I hadn't been in for a while, and then I went in last week, and he was there behind the counter, and I'd forgotten all about the FA Cup game until I saw his face. He was going, he just had this face on going, he's going to say something about it now. He's definitely going to say something about it now. Shit, 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 shit. And I had forgotten, and then I saw his face, and then I had to say something about it. I like that kind of thing more than, you know, vicious hatred and all that kind of stuff. You know.
Yeah.
Less killing and stuff. Not that I've ever killed anyone over football. I don't.
No. No, I mean, you don't think. You don't remember it. If anyway, you blacked out.
Yeah, exactly. I woke up and there was a load of blood and a knife and stuff, but that's it. I mean, I don't remember doing it.
No. So it doesn't really count.
No. No. Right. Well, look, will we leave it there for this week?
I think so. It's definitely taking on a darker hue, so I think we should get out while we can.
Certainly, murder and kissing Charlie Adam is a place nobody wants to be on a beautiful bank holiday Monday afternoon. The sun is shining out there. I might I might actually go outside.
Yeah. What's that like?
It's airy.
Mm. Mm. Intriguing. I must explore the possibility.
All right. Well, look, we'll do all this again next week. We're playing Burnley at the weekend. Is that right?
We are. Burnley away.
Burnley away. And then, of course, we've got to get ourselves ready for an FA Cup semi-final. But look, Burnley first. We'll discuss that on next week's Arsecast Extra, and I'll be here on Friday with a regular old Arsecast for you. So until then, cheers.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.